Hey everybody, it's Britt, lead pastor at Sunridge. Welcome back to our teaching podcast. You know, we are on a mission here at Sunridge to help people find and follow Jesus. We believe in the good news that Jesus welcomes all, regardless of how far you feel from God. That means we're a great starting point to explore Christianity or to sink your spiritual roots deep as a devoted Jesus follower. If you'd like to know more about us, just check out our website at sunridgechurch.org. And of course, we'd love to have you drop in anytime for a visit to learn and worship along with us. And now, here's our teaching for this week. Have you guys ever noticed how fast we can size someone up? It doesn't take long. You see a guy driving a really lifted truck. No offense to anybody who drove a lifted truck, but, and you just go, okay, I know what you're about. And or you hear someone's from somewhere in the country, and you're like, oh, I got you. And or someone posts something online, and you're like, I don't need to know anything else about you. We do this stuff all the time. We make snap judgments. He looks like that kind of guy, or for sure she's one of those people. But have you ever made a snap judgment about somebody, and then later you realize you were completely wrong? In that moment, you made a judgment about their character, their beliefs, their abilities, their future, and then later you just realize, man, I was so wrong about them. You judged them to not be worthy, and they ended up being extraordinary. Or, on the other hand, you judge someone to be amazing. You're going to be best friends and do karate in the garage that week, and they end up not being the person you thought they were. And, I see it in reverse from the other side all the time. It's like, oh, you're a pastor. And there's like mixed results there when people hear that. Or they say, oh, you used to be a firefighter. And when they hear that, they're like, so, like, how many dirt bikes, boats, and do you have a big truck too? Or they might say, oh, you're a fireman. Do you know my uncle? He works for so-and-so. He's a fireman. He's got a mustache. It's like, oh, yeah, I know. Actually, assumptions are a sign of our brain doing its job, because our brains are constantly taking in more information than we can actually handle, so it creates these shortcuts for us, because our brains are wired to use energy efficiently. It helps us avoiding, overthinking everything. It helps create order in a complicated world, and if our brain didn't do that for us, we would be stuck all the time in analysis paralysis. With all the life situations that come to us, it would be like this fresh thing, and our brain would have to sort it all out. But here's how that can work against us. Those same processes that help us decide quickly and react quickly can also cause us to see inaccurately. Because when we don't have all the information, our brain fills in the gaps for us. And it uses our past experiences, it uses our preferences, it uses our fears and our biases. So what is designed to make us efficient can actually end up becoming a filter, because those assumptions start to shape how we see people, entire groups of people. And we begin to think, oh, people from that political side, they're all my assumptions. Or you're from that generation, oh, I know all about you. People who live that lifestyle, they're all this way. Or people from that kind of background, they can't be trusted. Or people from that denomination, we make judgments about where people's kind of religious legacy comes from. Before we know it, we're not actually seeing people anymore. We're seeing categories. We're not listening. We're pre-interpreting. We're no longer curious, because our brains have already decided for us. And here's the thing. We don't just do this with other people. We do it with ourselves. I'm just not the person who can. Or I can never do that. And we do it with God. We think, well, God always works this way. And God would never work through a person like that. Or we think, God can never use a person like me. Or we're in a situation, we say, there's nothing good that could ever come from this. You know, all summer, we're looking at the disciples, and we're seeing that Jesus didn't choose perfect people to change the world. He chose ordinary people that were willing to follow him, and he still does. And today, we're going to look at two that you may be slightly familiar with, Philip and Nathanael. But I think you're going to be surprised. Together, they're going to show us how our assumptions can cause us to misjudge people and often miss what God is doing in the moment. So the big idea that comes through when we observe Philip and Nathanael is in your notes. Our assumptions shape what we see, but Jesus invites us to see more clearly. Our assumptions shape what we see. And we're going to see that theme come through as we go through our four questions we've been using for all the disciples as a template. Who were they? What do we know about their character or story? How did Jesus shape them? And then last, you know, what does this mean for us? So let's get started. Who were Philip and Nathanael? Both men appear in every list of the disciples, Matthew 10, Mark 3, Luke 6, and in Acts 1. But there's a little wrinkle. If you start comparing the lists, you'll find something that might be confusing to you. Let me show you. Here's one of the lists from Matthew, Matthew 10, 2. These are the names of the 12 disciples. First, Simon, who's called Peter, and his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, Simon the zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. Now, did you notice anything there? Where's Nathanael? You see, Nathanael is also known as Bartholomew. In the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they list Bartholomew as the disciple among the 12. But they never mention a disciple named Nathanael. But John, in his Gospel, refers to this 12th disciple as Nathanael. So what gives? Did the authors get confused? Actually, Bartholomew isn't actually a first name. It's a patronymic, which is a name derived from your father. It's kind of like your family name. And in simple terms, it means named after your father. Simon, son of Jonah. Remember James and John, sons of Zebedee. And in the case of Bartholomew, Bar here is translated son of. So family lineage, and we've mentioned this before, is really important in the first century as a form of identification to distinguish you from others and your who you are and your status, but also from others who share your same name. Because they didn't have social security cards and they didn't have, real IDs. So Nathanael is actually his first name. And Bartholomew is the name to identify his family lineage. And most scholars believe that Nathanael and Bartholomew are the same person. Different names, same man, same invitation from Jesus. Now, Philip, on the other hand, is practical and invitational. He's invitational. John tells us that when Jesus found Philip, he invited him to follow him. And it appears that immediately in John 1:44, Philip found Nathanael and told him, "We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law, about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." And then in verse 46, "Come and see." That's a pretty big statement. He doesn't say he's got everything figured out, but he knows enough to say, "Come and see." Nathanael is different. Nathanael was honest and sincere. He's honest and sincere. He appears to be spiritually serious and a kind of a straightforward person, at least in the eyes of Jesus. When Philip brought Nathanael to see Jesus, John tells us, John 1:47, when Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said of him, "Here truly is an Israelite in whom there is no deceit." And that is like a first century way of saying, like, he's the kind of guy that is what you see is what you get. So both Nathanael and Philip are sincere and spiritually open people. But we're going to see that even practical, spiritually open people and sincere people can still see things wrong. So So what do we see about their character in their story? Nathaniel made assumptions about people. He made assumptions about people. As we mentioned, after encountering Jesus, Philip finds his friend Nathaniel, and he tells him, "We found the Messiah, Jesus of Nazareth." And he responds with, in John 1:46, "Nazareth, can anything good come from there?" Nazareth was a tiny rural village in Galilee. It wasn't politically or economically important. And it didn't match the messianic expectations that people had. It didn't fit the script. And there's even a hint in this of a regional prejudice toward that region. And so Nazareth wasn't just a small town. It was a small town from the wrong part of the country. In Nathanael's mind, nothing good could come from there. And then, but Philip, he made assumptions about possibilities. You may remember when Jesus fed the 5,000, the crowds had followed Jesus to a remote area, and the day went long, they needed food. Jesus asked Philip, John 6:5, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" And then Philip does what all of us would naturally do in that position, the normal and responsible thing to do. He starts doing the math and thinking of their options. In verse 7, Philip answered him, "It would take more than a half year's wages to buy enough bread for each one to have a bite." But even though this is the appropriate thing to do in this case, there's a lesson in this moment for Philip. John gives us some insight here into what Jesus is up to. Verse 6, he says, "He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do." Do you ever feel like God does that to you? He puts you in a situation that you can't understand why, and he's testing us. I hate that part. Now, the text doesn't say this explicitly, but it appears Philip's imagination of what God could do was limited here, at least in this case. So Jesus is exposing a flaw in Philip's logical, facts-only based deduction. He's doing the math while standing next to the one who made the universe. And Philip's math formula needed to be tweaked here a little bit. Yeah, 1 + 1 = 2, but one, if it's 1 + God, then the answer can be 5,000. In another instance, John tells us of a moment when things were ramping up and times were getting more and more intense for Jesus, and Thomas reflects, we talked about him, "Lord, we don't understand what's going on. Where's all this headed? Tell us so we can know the way." And Jesus calls him to like a deeper trust and faith in him. And in John 14:6, he says, "I'm the way and the truth and the life. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well." And then Philip replies, "Lord, show us the Father and that will be enough for us." So here, Philip is missing who Jesus is, even though he's walking with them. In other words, Philip is saying, like, "We'll follow you, but just give us a glimpse of who the Heavenly Father is." And Jesus answered him, "Don't you know me, Philip? After I've been among you for such a long time." It's apparent here that it hasn't fully clicked for Philip that Jesus has come in the human flesh. And his assumption is like, what I've seen of Jesus, it's not enough for me yet. So Nathaniel makes assumptions about people and their background, and Philip makes assumptions about possibilities. Both of them underestimate Jesus in their assumptions. And that's not a criticism, certainly not from me. In fact, they sound a lot like me. So what does Jesus do with people like this? Does he reject them? Does he say, "You guys are never going to get it"? No, instead, he exposes the way they've been misformed, and then he reshapes them. So how does Jesus shape them? First off, Jesus breaks through Nathanael's assumptions, not with an argument, but by revealing himself. When Jesus saw Nathanael and declared, "Here truly is an Israelite in whom there's no deceit," Nathanael is set back on his heels. John 1:40, he says, "How do you know me?" Because as far as he could remember, he'd never encountered Jesus. And in verse 48, Jesus answered, I saw you while you were under the fig tree before Philip called you. And Nathanael responds, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. So this moment with Nathanael is fascinating to me because his response feels so sudden. Part of me wants to say, like, wait, what? I mean, Jesus didn't part the Red Sea in front of him or heal someone or raise the dead. He simply says, I saw you under the fig tree. You know, Bible scholars have weighed in on this, and it makes more sense to me now because take note of the progression. Before Nathanael even speaks, Jesus remarks on his sincerity. And Nathanael responds by asking, well, how do you know me? And that question matters because he's saying, this man sees something about me that he should not be able to see. And Jesus says, I saw you under the fig tree. And that, so here's the context, which like really opens it up. It's like in first century Jewish culture, sitting under a fig tree was often associated with a contemplative moment, like with prayer, reflection, meditation on scripture, longing for God. And so we don't know what Nathanael was doing here, but something's implied. Maybe he was praying, maybe he was questioning, maybe even studying scripture about the Messiah. John doesn't tell us. But the point is that Nathanael realizes Jesus saw him before he ever saw Jesus. And he realizes this isn't just a teacher from Nazareth. This is someone who knows me completely. In other words, Nathanael's assumptions about Jesus didn't fall apart because he got better information or he lost a debate. They fell apart because he was exposed to the real Jesus through his friend Philip. Then there's Philip. Jesus grows Philip's faith by not explaining everything, but by inviting him to follow. Jesus keeps putting Philip in these situations where mere logic isn't enough, and experience must give way to trust. And I can relate to Philip. He's logical, he's practical, he's analytical, he tries to connect all the dots. But over and over, Jesus keeps shaping Philip, not by explaining everything, but by inviting him to keep following him, to trust him. And you really see this in John 6, when the crowds were hungry, thousands of people, no food, no plan, and Jesus asked Philip what they should do, and his answer is completely reasonable. We don't have enough money, and it wouldn't help anyway. But here Jesus is teaching Philip something. Remember in verse 6, he said, he asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. In other words, Jesus was saying, I'm going to show you something that isn't logical. It won't add up. And he takes the little boy's lunch, and he blows Philip's mind. And if that wasn't enough, there were leftovers. John 6:13 says they filled baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. And then Jesus does it again in John 14. Jesus has been with the disciples for several years. They've all seen the miracles. They've sat under Jesus' teaching. And then Philip says, Lord, show us the Father and that will be enough. And Philip is saying, like, let's have one more thing, Jesus, one more proof. Clear up one more mystery. And Jesus responds, don't you know me, Philip, even after I've been among you for such a long time? Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. And here Jesus isn't rebuking him. He's not being harsh. He's being relational. He's saying, Philip, the answer here isn't more information. The answer is me. And Jesus grows Philip's faith not by explaining everything, but inviting him, take another step in following me through all the uncertainty, his doubts, and his disappointments. Jesus shapes both Nathanael and Philip by showing them you're not always going to fully understand what he's doing, but you can trust him. Now you say, okay, but that's great. We see how Nathanael and Philip were limited by their assumptions. You've convinced me. But what do stories about two men who are trying to follow Jesus 2,000 years ago have to do with you and me living in here, in the Temecula Valley. What does it mean for us? You know, Nathaniel and Philip weren't the only one who made assumptions. So number one, something to think about. We make assumptions about others, and it limits how we see them. Isn't that true? Nathaniel hears one word, Nazareth, and he thinks he knows everything he needs to know. And I'm not talking about the band, Nazareth. Love, hurt, no, never mind. He's thinking of what was known as a backwater, unimportant, obscure little town. The first century version of Hooterville, of Petticoat Junction. People of my generation, where Uncle Joe is still moving kind of slow. Some of you are like, I don't know what you're talking about, Britt. Just Google it. Go on the Google and check it out. Nathaniel asked sarcastically, can anything good come from there? And it wasn't a question. It was a conclusion. And aren't you glad that's just a first century problem? Do we do the same thing? We've said when we hear where someone's from, we immediately know what they believe and, you know, how they see the world. Recently, I met someone from Texas, and when they found out I lived in California, they said, oh, man, I feel so sorry for you. And I said, yeah, it's pretty awful here with all those sunny days, the beaches, the mountains, the national parks. This is a blank. Because we size people up, you know, really quickly, and we think, I know who you are. You're from that generation. Nothing good could come from there. You're from that political side. Nothing good could come from there. You believe that, nothing good could come from there. You're from that country, nothing good could come from there. And our assumptions allow us to disqualify them from being human or worthy of kind treatment or value or even basic human rights. Then there's Jesus, and I would say the Jesus way. In Matthew 9:9, remember we looked at Matthew. He saw a man named Matthew sitting in a tax collector's booth, and he said, follow me. So in that last week, we saw how that despised tax collector eventually writes a gospel. So Jesus shatters our assumptions. Jesus engages a Samaritan woman at a well, and she says, you're a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? And then John himself adds, for Jews do not associate with Samaritans. Nothing good could come from there. And then we know from John's account that that woman becomes a witness to her entire village. I was talking to somebody this week, and they made a comment about someone that if I said their name, you would recognize this name. And they said something about what that person had said. And I said, there's no way that person said that. No, I saw it, da 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 da. And I'm like, there's no way that person said that. So being inquisitive, I Googled it, I fact-checked it. I said, did this person say this? And it came back with the story that like, no, that person never said that. This is what they said, and this is what this group has turned that into. So it's completely false. And what I took away from that is like, one, that person made assumptions about the other person, right? Like, of course that's going to be true about them. And then I made an assumption, there's no way that person said that. So we do it. But we always have fact check. We always have background. You know, it's just so weird how we do that. And Jesus over and over again shows us the people that we write off are very often the people that God is working in. So the question is, like, who have you and I already decided that nothing good could come from there? And you know, it's not just others we make assumptions about. Number two, we make assumptions about ourselves, and that limits how we follow Jesus. When Philip brings Nathanael to Jesus, Nathanael almost misses the moment entirely. And the text doesn't directly say this, but Jesus' response suggests Nathanael's vision of what God could do was far too small. And when Jesus said to him, "You believe because I told you I saw you under the fig tree, you will see greater things than that." And then he added, "Very truly, you will see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." So Jesus reveals to him, "You're going to be witness and part of something that is just beyond your imagination." He could never imagine that about himself. And isn't it true that we all carry those assumptions about ourselves? "God, you could never use me like that. I'm no Apostle Paul. I'm too flawed. I'm too fearful. I'm not spiritual enough. I don't know enough." So we hold back and we stay comfortable and we settle in. Imagine what if Philip had talked himself out of inviting Nathanael to meet Jesus? What if he said to himself, "God could never use me to help someone find Jesus, so I'm not going to invite him"? You know, that's ridiculous. Or what if he just assumed, knowing some of Nathanael's prejudices already, that he just told himself, "Why would I say anything? He's never going to listen because he's that kind of person." Can I remind you that what we've been seeing already, Jesus took crusty old fishermen and made them leaders of his movement. I've seen people that thought they had little to offer or were so anxious and getting in front of kids even, and have become amazing volunteers in our children's ministry. I would say, since I've been here at Sunridge, to a person, when we've invited somebody into being an elder here based on your nominations, you know what their first response is? "Dude, I can't be an elder. That's crazy." I know people that are remarkable Bible teachers that are like just quiet and insecure, and you wouldn't think that they could get up and teach the Bible, but God works through them and they're doing stuff that they never imagined that they could do. The Apostle Paul wrote to the believers in Corinth, and by the way, when we're done with disciples, this is the next book in the Bible we're gonna study, 1 Corinthians. And in verse 126, Paul writes, "Brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong." You see, God has always used ordinary people, the foolish things, the weak things, to do his work. Because when you become a Christian, God isn't just forgiving your past, he's rewriting your future. And the truth is, most of us, many of us, I would say, are not held back by sin. We're held back by our assumptions about what we think God could do through us. So the question to ask is, what assumptions are you making about yourself that is keeping you from taking that next step and following Jesus? So we make assumptions about ourselves, we make assumptions about others, and then last, we make assumptions about God. And it limits what we expect from him. Philip was the kind of guy who was grounded in what makes sense. And that's good, right? We need more people who can think ahead, deal in reality, think through something logically. But Philip also shows us something else, that sometimes our assumptions about what's realistic places a limitation on what we believe God can do. When Jesus asked, "Where can we find bread to feed all these people?" and John immediately tells us he asked this only to test him. Why test him? Because he was so practical. Philip said, "Show us, Lord, show us the Father, and that'll be enough for us." And Jesus responds, "Don't you know me, Philip, even after I've been among you for such a long time?" In other words, you're assuming, Philip, that God is somewhere else. And all of us practical people in that situation, we conclude, it would take more than a half year's wages to buy this bread. But we forget to ask, how might God intervene in this? We want God to assure us just a little bit more than he has. And he says, "You're looking past me. I've been standing in front of you the whole time." And we do this in our marriages, with our kids, about our future, about the culture, about the thing that we have in front of us right now to face and to deal with. And we do it in our own failures. And then we quietly do the math, often subconsciously. This is too big. This is too far gone. And it's not going to work out. And we don't reject God outright. We just quietly decide in our hearts where he will work and where he will not. And we forget where Jesus said in Matthew 19:26, "With man, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible." So you can take that to a completely unrealistic place, but it's there for all of us. So the question might be, where might God be ready to work that I've already dismissed the possibility? I'm going to ask the band to come up. And while they do, at the beginning, we talked about how quickly we size people up, how we make assumptions about others, about ourselves, about God. And Philip assumed nothing good could happen without enough resources. And Nathaniel assumed nothing good could come out of Nazareth. And both of them, they almost missed Jesus because they were filtering reality through their assumptions. But Jesus invited them to think a little more clearly and through a different lens. And here's the great thing, you guys. Jesus chose people like Philip and Nathaniel, and he still does. And that might be what Jesus wants to do for some of us today. Maybe the invitation through looking through the lens of the life of Philip and Nathaniel is to stop deciding ahead of time so much about who God can use or what God can do or where God might work. And then maybe we should stop assuming and start anticipating about what God can do in us, through us, and with others. With that thought, let's just stand and respond in worship. Thanks.
Hey everybody, it's Britt again. Thanks for listening. If you need something, if you have a question, or you'd just like us to pray for you, you can reach us through email, info@sunridgechurch.org. We hope you'll listen in again next week, but in the meantime, keep helping people find and follow Jesus.